Welcome to Australia's Fiercely Independent Property Podcast.
Residential property is the only asset class we live in. It is where we raise our families, and it's our most expensive investment, yet property advice remains unregulated.
Listen to three pioneers of the property industry, each with diverse areas of expertise in property planning, buying, and education.
We'll distill the raw truth from the ill-informed.
Join the property planner, David Johnston, the property buyer, Kate Bakos.
That's me.
And the property professor, Peter Kalizos, as we take you on a journey through the maze of property, mortgage and money decisions to empower you to create your ideal lifestyle.
Well, hello everyone. Today I'm joined with my two fabulous co-hosts to chat about something that we've had ongoing discussion over. And in particular, Pete shed some light on a fantastic correlation that he'd worked through, but since interest rates have been on the move, we've all put our minds together and decided to deliver a session today that's all about Australian interest rate movement versus property values. Dave and Pete, how are you both?
Very well, thanks, Kate.
Great to see you.
In unison.
Yeah, that's good. It's like being the school teacher. Dave, we owe you a massive congrats, you and the team. We're stoked to hear that you were not only finalists, but you took out the gong for two MFAA awards, which is our National Mortgage Association Industry Awards. And, you know, to see you guys up there for the Excellence Awards is always exciting. But to take out Mortgage Firm for Victoria and also Customer Service, massive high five to all of you. We can't wait for the Nationals.
Yeah, thanks, Kate.
Well done, Dave. Great work by you and the team, mate. Best in Victoria. Very good.
Was really thrilling to win the awards and a great achievement for our team and reflection on all the hard work and effort they've put in really, you know, over the last couple of years. Obviously, the business has been going for 17 years, but we didn't actually run for them last year. You know, just coming out of COVID to actually be recognised as the best mortgage business in Victoria and also providing the best customer service was pretty amazing, actually. So I was just, yeah, so happy for the team, and it's a great reflection on all the hard work they put in for our clients.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Oh, you should be really proud. You can walk on a cloud all week, you're allowed to.
Oh, yeah.
It's awesome.
It was a good fun night, and we've been catching up on sleep since, I think.
Now, before we get into today's episode, have you both got a bit of a market update that you've been thinking about sharing? Before we get into today's episode, take a listen to our weekly market update.
In preparation for this particular session on interest rates and property prices and unemployment rate and cash rates, I just wanted to allay people's fears because there's a lot of negative talk out there about property prices dropping. And they've already started in some capital cities, and nationally they probably will. But as you will hear in this episode, property price out of the last 34 years, which is when the ABS started taking stats on property prices have only dropped on three occasions. And you'll have to listen to the rest of the show to find out exactly by how much and when. But, you know, it's actually insignificant compared to the three biggest price rises over the last 34 years. So probably not a proper market update, is it? But it's just like,
it's a little,
you know,
teaser.
Setting the scene.
Yeah, a little teaser to get you to stay on and listen on to the rest of the podcast.
Yeah, true. Well, I had the question a lot with our first interest rate increase when we had a 25 basis points move. And following the last one, which everyone knows was 50, I had a lot more of the same question. People saying, I want to buy a property, but hang on just a second, Kate, can I ask you a question? What do you think will happen with property values? And it's a very hard question to ask someone like me because I'm naturally biased. And I want to say that honestly. I want to see people buying from a selfish run my business point of view. But likewise, I also have to be prepared to share what I think is actually going to happen. And I put together a blog, which we'll share in the show notes, but my main message with it is there is so much more to property price movement than interest rates, so much more. And I had a look at what I think the drivers could be if we're sustaining growth in the short to medium term. And I think that supply will play a major role in that. If we have a reduction in supply of stock and we still have tight unemployment and we still have people in secure jobs. And I have to really bring that to life for our listeners, because last year and the year before, job security was top of mind and it was fearful for a lot of people. Things are very, very different now to what they were 2 years ago, because we had not only the threat of the pandemic, but we didn't have a tight unemployment rate like we do. And the other thing I want to bring to people's attention is when people make a purchase decision, we're not just talking about new home buyers who are maxing out their borrowing capacity. We get a lot of people who aren't maxing out their borrowing capacity. It might be a seasoned investor or an upgrader. By then, they've got equity. They're making a decision about how much they want to borrow. They're not necessarily taking it to the very edge of their capacity. So when people say to me, well, interest rate increases will put pressure on people's borrowing capacity and they'll have less money to spend, it's not the only measure, and it's not necessarily true. It's only applicable to those who are taking it to the edge. So, yeah, food for thought. We're going to uncover a lot today, but I did want to put that out there. It's a question I field a lot, and standing back and trying to answer it objectively is really important, and I hope that today we can add to that.
Yeah, great points, Kate. We could do a whole episode on reasons why the property market won't fall dramatically and what will underpin that and put a floor under it, but that's not what today's episode's about. So
no. I won't go. Have you got a market update, Dave?
Mine, I just thought I'd touch on the plans for the potential for stamp duty being abolished or, you know, transitioned across to a land tax. So the New South Wales Premier, Dominic Perrottet, is planning to make some announcements in the New South Wales budget next week, and one of them is certainly linked to stamp duty. But he is trying to... He's asking for federal assistance and saying they won't proceed without federal assistance, as the state governments like to do, is always get hand out to the feds when they're looking for some sort of investment or tax reform. And at this stage, the new federal treasurer, Jim Chalmers, has suggested that if the states want to do any sort of form of property tax reform, then they need to do it on their own. And they're unlikely to be involved. So, so we'll see. Watch this space and see how that continues to play out.
Yeah, this will be an exciting and very interesting move if they do it. There are so many mixed views on it. We should talk about this in detail for another rep. We love hearing from our listeners and we'd love to tackle more of your questions. So please, if you have any on your mind, no matter how great or small, send us a message. You can email us info@propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor, or go to our website, Facebook page, or simply click on the link in your podcast app under the play button and fill out our online form. Well, let's get into today's episode. And Dave, we're going to go back through the history pages and talk about interest rate movement, and in particular, a really critical date, that is flooding the Australian dollar back in December 1983. Can I ask you to tell this story?
Some of the modernisation of our economy, one of the first things we did in 1983 was float the Australian dollar. That allowed us to have more control over money supply. So like many other countries at that time, we wanted to target the growth of money supply under a policy known as monetary targeting. The Reserve Bank was required to meet all requests to exchange foreign currency for Australian dollars or vice versa at the prevailing exchange rate. And that meant that the supply of Australian dollars and therefore the domestic monetary supply was affected by changes in the demand for purchases and sales of Aussie dollars, which could arise and cause risk of large capital flows in or out. So that ultimately meant prior to the float, there was a significant volatility in domestic monetary conditions. So that's the key reason why a government would float the dollar. Then about 7 years later, we made the decision to start targeting the cash rate. New Zealand was the first government to do that.
Yep.
And that's the rate charged on overnight loans between the banks, but it has a powerful influence on other rates and forms a base on which the structure of interest rates in the economy is built. So there were two major moves.
In layman's terms, when we look at how it used to be done versus how they adopted this process, Pete, are you okay to explain to listeners in layman's terms what this all meant? So from floating the dollar to setting the cash rate target.
If I had studied macroeconomics at uni, I would.
Oh, I love it. Sorry, I didn't mean to do that to you.
No, Dave. No, that's all right. I'm going to handball quickly over to Dave. Yeah. So you keep going, Dave.
We're taking notes.
Yeah. Well, look, basically it meant that around interest rates, we could actually drive the rate that most people paid on their loans, and therefore that can have a direct impact on the Australian economy, and therefore it allows the Reserve Bank to influence our economic conditions rather than them be more so at the whim of international conditions and probably larger economies. So although we do, you know, still saying used to be the US sneezes, we catch a cold, and now it's probably if China sneezes, we also catch a cold, or maybe the flu. Basically, it allows us to have more control over our own economy, basically, by being able to target the cash rate. And the same goes with floating the dollar, is it's a live market and the government and the RBA can make different decisions to influence where our currency's rate of conversion, particularly primarily against the US dollar, which then can, you know, particularly help or hinder, you know, our exports, imports, and that obviously can support the broader economy of Australia.
Yeah, well said. And if we think about our interest rate movements in terms of cycles, you know, from peaks to troughs, and we see less volatility in that space than we do in spaces such as property price movement. But we've had three rate cycles since all of this exciting activity in the 80s and 1990. And as people have often said, and we've talked about it, we had interest rates hit 17.5% in 1990. And as Paul Keating coined it, you know, it was a recession that we had to have in order to undertake this process going forward. And since 1990, we've had an average cash rate of 4.7%, which back in the day that sounded really low, and now we all think that that's quite high. But since 1993, when the cash rate came back down, our average cash rate has been 4.05. So we're talking here about 30 years, essentially, for the last 30 years. Now, we've had three rate cycles since this time, and we're going to talk through each rate cycle now, keep walking down memory lane. Rate lowering cycle number one, the reduction in January 1990 from 17.5 at peak to July 1993. It got to an all-time low of 4.75 at the time. So that was only 18 months for it to topple down. It must have been an extraordinarily challenging time to navigate for any homeowners or investors. And Pete, you were an active investor during this time.
Certainly. We thought Christmas had come. To go from 17.5% to 4.75% in that 2.5 year period. But, you know, there was a reason that happened, and that was because of the recession. So the 90s recession was arguably the most severe we've had. Unemployment really high, interest rates really high, inflation really high. But interestingly, and we've said it many times on this show, Australian property prices, residential property prices anyway, were quite resilient. I don't want to take away, you know, what Dave's going to talk about, but you'll see very soon that Australian residential property prices are quite resilient. For those of us that were around in the 90s, we couldn't say the same about commercial property. And my fear is that something similar might happen to commercial property this time around. But Dave, over to you, mate.
Yeah, well, look, one of the reasons we wanted to go through this topic of the history of interest rates and what happened with the residential property market in Australia was to see what the correlation has been in terms of, because obviously there's a lot of fear-mongering around at the moment about rates going up and prices coming down. And that very well might happen, but we wanted to just see, okay, over the last 30 years, what has actually happened? Because obviously, as we know, history gives you an insight into what's likely to happen in the future, and the old saying, history repeats. That first cycle of rates dropping by 13% over a year and 6 months, the property market actually, you know, only grew by 2% annual growth. So contrary to what a lot of people are saying at the moment, the rate reductions has caused the property market to go. And yeah, there definitely might be a correlation. There's some
a critical piece there, though. Another measure, back to our point about property prices being influenced by lots of different things, a critical measure is the unemployment rate. And we should have a look at that, because in 1990 it was 6.1 and in 1993 it was 10.9,
yep.
Which is huge.
So we had the cash rate coming down, yep. Unemployment
going up.
And property, yeah. I mean, 2% is really neither here nor there, is it, with property prices? Yeah. And property prices just stayed about the same. So there's obviously more than just interest rates at play. Because you imagine, so you took out the loan in 1990 and let's call it $100,000 and you're paying 17.5% interest, and 2.5 years later you're only paying 4.75%. Now, that's huge. You would have a stack more disposable income.
If you had
a job.
And that's
just from your home mortgage, let alone business interests. Yeah.
As long as you didn't fix.
Yeah.
My poor old dad fixed. He fixed for 18.9.
Yeah. Oh, I was reading about a developer, Rich Lister, who fixed at about 15%. And he was saying, like, that interest alone was costing him an extra $180,000 a year for, you know, the next 3 years or something. But
yeah, my mum went back to work to pay the interest bill, the increased interest component, to think, you know, fixing at credit card rates. And I said to my dad, what were you thinking? Which is a really unfair thing to ask, because I was 14 and, you know, enjoying my own little planet. But he just said I was really fearful it was going to hit 25 or 30.
Yeah.
And so that was it.
That was the lowering cycle number one.
Yeah.
And thankfully we've never went anywhere near rates like that since, above 10%, let alone up as high as 17%. So then it entered a tightening cycle in August 1994. It went from 4.75% to 7.5% in the space of 5 months.
That's 300 basis points in the space of 5 months. So they're talking, the worst case scenario at the moment is 300 basis points, but over 2 years. So you know, maybe. If you want to get an idea what might happen this time around, I reckon this is probably the time period that we need to take most note of.
Exactly.
But unemployment was still very high. It was still towards 10.
Yeah.
So unemployment was 8.6. We did have much lower inflation. Well, it was at 2% in 94, 4.5% it went up to in 95, and then down to 2.65 in 96. Yeah, property prices grew by 7%.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is.
Very tight time frame, high unemployment, volatile interest rate movement. Interesting stuff.
But even when we look at after 1994, right, in 1995 they grew by 0.3%, not much. 1996, 1.7. 1998, 6%. And then it continues to grow from then on. So even, a few years later, it never dropped in value. Like there wasn't a delayed effect. Other factors at play.
And all this time. Unless you say
the delayed effect is just flatter values in 2 and 3 afterwards.
So at this particular time, so we're into the rate lowering cycle number two, what are we watching inflation do?
Well, inflation got smashed.
Yeah, really low.
You could believe that that came off the back of the really rapid rate rises.
Yes.
That inflation, which is obviously what we're all hoping
for. Ground to a halt. We want to slow it down, but we don't want to.
Sounds very similar, doesn't it?
Yeah.
What's happening now?
Is there a chance that we could oversteer this ship? I mean, they've oversteered it before.
Absolutely. I think they're pretty good at oversteering.
And we can talk about the negative impact of super low inflation. We have a target band for a reason. It's not low as good. We like to stick within our band.
Exactly. So that little period when the rate tightening cycle was occurring, inflation was starting to be strong and getting up, you know, in the fours. And then out the other side, inflation got down to under 1%, which obviously is...
Yeah, for one calendar year in 97, it was 0.23%, which is negligible.
So that means it's unlikely incomes are rising. Generally speaking, you would see rises in asset values, at least in companies or the share market. But, yeah, as the property market over that period, certainly rates coming down to obviously try and stimulate the economy. We've got to remember that rates rise when the economy is strong and potentially too strong, and that's why the rates are rising at the moment. And in that period of time, it was the opposite. They were trying to get so rate lowering cycle. They actually basically just reversed what they did in those 5 months. They reduced the rates precisely the same amount from 7.5%.
Back to 4.5%.
Back to 4.75%. They just did it over 2 years and 5 months this time. Yeah.
We've got a roller coaster happening through the 90s. Yeah. And what was happening with house price values?
Over those few years, they averaged growth of 7%.
So when they went up, 7%, when they came down, 7%?
Yeah.
Okay, so far I'm not seeing a correlation here.
No correlation whatsoever.
Yeah. So enter rate tightening cycle number two from the very end of that decade. November 99 to August 2000, Dave, 9 months, we had a slight increase in interest rates from 4.75 to 6.25, which is where they peaked. That was over a 9 month period. Tell us a bit about the unemployment.
So unemployment started at 6.4, and then by the end of the period, it had reduced down to 6.1%. So it was coming down while rates were going up. Inflation,
actually, it's interesting, doesn't it?
Yeah. Inflation really rebounded over that period. So, again, it was, you can see this sort of flow of the follow-on effect, but it not happening whilst the Reserve Bank's doing what it's aiming it to do. So rates came down, inflation starts to go up, but later on. Yeah. And then they start making their move in the opposite direction when they seemingly are getting what they want. But... Yes. They're now course correcting again. Yeah, so inflation jumped by 3% from 1999 to 2000.
Okay, so we're in a higher interest rate environment, and then what happens while we're tightening, we're increasing interest rates and we're trying to tackle inflation during this period. Pete, between 1999 and 2001, what did property prices do?
Oh, it was fantastic. But before we leave the 90s, I just want to draw some similarities here. So the recession in the 90s was late 1990 to late 1991. That's when they dropped interest rates from about 17.5% to 4.75%. Very similar to the recession that was caused by COVID, where our interest rates dropped. Then in 1994, interest rates went up 300 basis points over that five-month period. And here we are, we're looking to increase interest rates again. But back in the 90s, as we've just shared, property prices actually increased a bit. They didn't decrease. And so to be a brave person that would say property prices will continue to rise for the next year or two, but again, we're just trying to draw some similarities between what's happened in the past and what might happen now, because I know many people are worried about interest rates going up because we haven't had them for about 10 years, most people haven't, well, if you've had a loan for the last 10 years,
that's right,
you haven't experienced an interest rate rise. So this is your first one. So obviously you'd be scared. But again, if we have a look back at what's happened in the past and base our opinion on fact, then really there's not that much to be scared of.
Yeah.
And sorry, Kate, your question, late 1990s to early 2000s?
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you one thing that that happened that many people would not be aware of was the introduction of the GST. So in mid-1999, they announced that the GST was going to come in. And so the market, in particular property, stagnates because people think, what's going to happen on what's going to happen on the 1st of July 2020? Well, 1st of July 2020 comes And, you know, everybody thinks that automatically things are going to be 10% more because we've never had a GST here or value-added tax. And so that's when John Howard and the Liberal government back then brought in a very generous first-home buyer scheme, which was $7,000 for any home. But then the building lobby got into their ear, and if you were going to build something new, it doubled to $14,000. So
boost.
As well as interest rates, inflation, unemployment rate, we had the introduction of the GST to complicate things, and my God, did property prices go berserk in the early 2000s with the stimulus of that first home buyer grant.
Interesting when they tinker with stuff, that can happen. Dave, you've highlighted this beautifully in our notes that during 1999 to 2001, when we were increasing interest rates and tackling this inflation rate that had eclipsed 4%, our annualised growth rate for property was 18%.
If we were, and we've probably touched on this previously, if you're going to say there's one major correlator with property values really skyrocketing over a period of time, I would suggest that it's to do with government stimulus.
Yeah, I would say. It's funny that.
100%.
It's crazy.
100%.
Yeah. So,
and the banks also come into play, Dave. I think, Kate, were you in mortgage broking back then or?
Yeah,
or
I was, not? Yes.
And all right, so both of you would remember, like back then to take out a mortgage, remember the low doc loans or no doc loans?
I loved them.
You just signed a piece of paper to say, yep,
I'm good for it.
The mortgage repayment.
Yeah. I was never that comfortable with those types of loans myself.
Yeah, because you weren't self-employed.
But there were certainly plenty of them around.
There were.
You didn't have to go. I mean, the amount of compliance you have to go through, a mortgage broker has to go through nowadays is just significant.
Back then you just needed, if you're in doubt, you just needed a letter from their accountant.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Exactly. And then the state governments got on board at the stimulus as well. So they were piling on for the first home buyers. And, you know, I think they matched what the government would provide in Victoria, for example. If you bought a new property in regional Victoria, you could get up to $28,000.
Yeah, it was enormous. And as a percentage of the median values in the regions at the time, that was a real kicker.
Huge.
And some of them were so significant, they would eliminate the requirement for genuine savings, because when you're going for a very high LVR loan as a first home buyer, that they'll often have a requirement to see that you've genuinely saved to demonstrate a pattern of good behaviour. Yeah. And if your kickers were big enough, you'd already jump over that hurdle. You wouldn't even have to do that. And we had loans for 104% at one stage.
That's true. There was, yep. Just a quick reminder, you can access our show notes, including links to all of the resources we talk about on our website, which is propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor.com.au.
Tripping back down memory lane, 2001, we've just had 18% annualised growth. We go into a rate lowering cycle, which I'm scratching my head, to be honest. What made us lower the rates after having those sorts of figures? So we still had high inflation, we did have relatively high unemployment, but we also had strong property price movement. What was the basis of the decision in Feb 2001 to cut rates quickly?
Just looking at the key numbers, you'd have to assume something to do with unemployment. And
we peaked,
hoping to continue to push unemployment back down towards, you know, 5 and 4.
Yeah, we peaked at 6.9 in December 2001. Mm. Average inflation was still well over 4.
Yeah.
And unemployment then in April 2002 was very slightly reduced at 6.3. Average inflation over 2002 calendar year was reduced to 3.05. And Pete, tell us about property price movement then.
In the early 2000s?
Yeah, in
01
to 02.
2001 increased by 15.5%. 2002 increased by 18.4%.
Yep.
2003 increased by 19.3%. And you would think, well, after three big years, we would have to see prices go negative.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't. They didn't go negative for several years. So, you know, another thing people think, oh, if you've had you know, really big property boom, you know, prices go up a lot, then prices got to come down to, you know, reach some sort of magical equilibrium.
Yeah.
Well, they don't. As you'll see soon, because I did promise I'd tell you when and how much property prices dropped over the last 34 years, you will see that that's not the case, because there are many, many things that impact property prices. It's not just interest rates. It's not just inflation. It's not just the unemployment rate.
Yes.
There are many things.
Many. So we then, in May 2002, enter into a rate tightening cycle. And this one runs for 5 years and 10 months. So what we're starting to see now, after the recession that we had to have, is things are starting to calm down. We're getting less volatility. And Dave and I, these are the rates that we will remember when we think about being active investors and having loans and seeing interest rate movement. This is more familiar for me than the highs and lows of the 80s and 90s that my parents experienced.
Yeah.
And our rates hovered between 4.25 at their all-time low to 7.25 at their peak. And I have to say I didn't really enjoy 7.25, but it wasn't backbreaking. It was just more of an annoying headache when you'd get the letter through in the mail. And if you're a multi-property investor, you'd get a few letters in the mail and they were never nice. They were all the same. It was like getting, you know, a handful of bad report cards. But we're seeing less volatility. And over the six-year period, May 2002 to March 2008, we saw unemployment drop from 6.4 to 4.1. So we're getting closer to comfortable territory for unemployment. And we saw inflation broadly managed. You know, we had a few highs and lows there, but none of it was too far outside of the target band. We did get to 4.35 in the 2008 calendar year. We're starting to see things stabilising, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, for perspective, today the cash rate is at 0.85%. This period started at 4.25% and gradually rose to 7.25 over almost 6 years. It just kept going up.
But we called that normal. You know,
we called that normal.
Yeah. It was at the uncomfortable end of normal.
It was a strong economy. Unemployment was gradually coming down over that period of time to close to as low as it is now, so around 4%. Inflation had gradually bounced around but started to build towards the end, and the end of this was the GFC. It was the big hit of GFC.
Yeah.
But, you know, if we're looking at what happened to property prices over those almost 6 years of rates only going up, by 3% all up, well, property prices grew on average by 7.2% per annum.
And at that rate, they double every 10 years. So even during that period of time, they were still sticking with the average where property prices double every 10 years.
Yeah, despite rates going up for almost 6 years straight.
Yeah.
So what does that say to us? It says, you know, other parts of the economy make up for rates going up. It says, you know, rates increasing is to manage the strength of a positive economy. History tells us that, again, it didn't really impact the property market.
Yeah, I think that's a really fair point to make, because during this time I would probably describe it as a more stable time compared to the others, and we've had a more consistent rate of annualised growth. 7.2% is, by anyone's measure, pretty close to the historical average for a national median price movement.
Yeah, exactly.
So then we head into rate lowering cycle number four. And this is a really tough time. You've just mentioned the GFC, and I remember working as a mortgage broker and also being an active purchaser and investor then. And my husband just said to me, "I hope you know what you're doing." Because I said, "Now's the time for us to get out there and purchase." And it did take a fair amount of courage, but also a lot of research and backing to decide that this was a strategy that we were happy to adopt. But putting that aside, let's talk about what happened during this period, because it was, everything happened fast again. We had a lot of volatility.
Well, you know, I guess the closest correlation to it was when COVID hit, in terms of concern and worry about the economy.
Yeah.
And although when COVID hit, we didn't have as much room to move on rates, here the rates are up at 7.25. So in just 8 months, rates were reduced from 7.25% to 3%.
Yeah.
So that is a huge drop of 4.25% over that period of time. So the 2 years from those rates starting to reduce, when people really worried about what was going to happen to the economy, asset values, share market, property values. Well, again, property values were very resilient and grew at 8% compound growth over those 2 years.
Yeah. And we'll all remember that run that we had when we had all of that government stimulus thrown at us in the same way that happened straight after COVID struck. Things went crazy. We had a huge run on property values. And at the time, you could get a variable interest rate just under 5%, which was an enormous shock for everyone. It was sort of like when we talk about the 2% days now. Mm. So, you know, it was a shocking time. And things did stabilise reasonably quickly, considering the uproar and the scary headlines following the GFC. And you remember we even had documentaries on it, and all of those people were talking about Australia experiencing what America had experienced. And it was a very, very scary time for a lot of people.
I remember Associate Professor Steve Keen said property prices were going to drop 40%. I do acknowledge the fact that he truly believed what he said, because he actually sold his property in Sydney at that time. But unfortunately for him, property prices went up. He lost the bet, and I think he had to climb up to the top of Mount Kosciuszko.
He did, wearing a T-shirt saying, "I was wrong." Horrible.
But, I mean, there are men, in particular, overseas macroeconomists get our property market so wrong because they don't really understand the Australian residential property market and Australians' connection to owning their own home. You know, I've got international students in my classes, and, you know, every culture is different so far when it comes to ownership of homes. Some people have just forgotten all about it because it's just too expensive. But for us, it's still achievable. So people still strive for that. So, you know, we might give up many other things, but we're not going to give up the dream of owning our own home, not just yet anyway.
Yeah.
We're all really excited when interest rates for home loans had a 4 in front of them.
and now people are scared if they're going to get an interest rate with a 4 in front of them.
So rate tightening occurred again following the GFC freakout and the stimulus. And from October 2009, we then applied some rate increases over just over 12 months. And it was an entire percent, so 100 basis points over 14 months. Our unemployment rate dropped from 5.6 to 5.1. Inflation moved from 1.77 to 2.86. Reasonably stable in the scheme of things, particularly taking into account what we'd just been through. And then they stayed at the top for 11 months. And at that stage, unemployment was 5.2. Inflation had crept up to 3.33. And median values decreased. We had negative 1%. Okay, so it's the first decrease that we've talked about during a cycle, but it was pretty minuscule, 1%. I don't want to sound cavalier, but that's not enough to go selling off all of your assets. And then rate lowering cycle number 5. So from November 11 to the world that we know now, we had only rate lowering. And I think this is a really important one to talk about, because the contingent that are most scared and sitting it out or getting jittery and, you know, making the decision to not be active in the property market right now is broadly the contingent that has never experienced interest rate fluctuation or increases. They've only seen record low rates.
I think that's a big part of the reason why the fear exists, and it's so much noisier than in the past, because we've had such a long period without rate increases. So let's say it's 10 years. So you've got all the younger people who are looking to get in for the first time, have never known anything different. And then you've got all the people who've only ever owned during this period of time with rates coming down. So it's the biggest cohort by a significant margin ever of the people who either own property or who are interested in buying property who have never seen rates go up. So therefore, there's more noise coming from people who haven't experienced it before. and are fearful of what's going to happen. Now, obviously, we know sentiment does impact real outcomes, which is why sentiment gets measured so much. So potentially because of that, such a large cohort who haven't ever experienced higher rates being so concerned and negative around the possibility of what might happen, maybe it will make the outcome this time worse than it has been. But, you know, that won't be necessarily that hard to do given the worst has only been negative 1% annual yes. growth for the last three decades. So, but I think that certainly has,
It's a great point. And you have talked about facing the negatives, but the reality is we've seen positive price movement far more than we've talked about negative, and it's a tiny increment.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, what?
And it's a reminder of the push-pull factors. You know, if rates are going up, it means the economy's strong, you know. So it's not just black and white, like rates are going up, well, everything's going poorly. No, it's actually most things in the economy are going well, and that's why rates go up. So, yeah.
Now, one really interesting hallmark of that 11-year period of, you know, lowering interest rates is that inflation got really tight, really tight. And we were looking at figures under 2% broadly for almost every single calendar year. And that's not in our inflationary band that they prefer. So there was that constant battle, you know, which lever do we pull to increase the inflation just a little bit, but without rattling the unemployment rate, which was, in contrast, reasonably high. Our unemployment rate in November 11 was 5.2, and in November 2020, 6.8. They're higher figures than we prefer. And of course, we reached this year and unemployment was significantly lower. And that challenged things for our RBA. And as we know, we've had the rate increases applied. But let's talk about the annualized growth in that 10-year period between December 2011 and December 2021. 6.7 annualized growth. So a little bit softer than the previous years that we've talked about where volatility was higher. So while things were stable or stabilised, and while our interest rates were trending down, we had lower long-term capital growth each year.
And broadly in line with the long-term average though, isn't it?
Not
so
far
6.7%, maybe it's just under 7-ish percent. So it was still quite strong.
This challenges the notion, though, that falling interest rates gives rise to a property price growth.
It does, yeah. And I think it's the speed of change that can play a part. But the thing that comes through, well, there's many things that come through, but one of them is things average out over the longer term.
They do, don't they?
Yeah. I think what's really important to note is that shocks are the things that have a dire impact or a dramatic impact, should I say. Yeah. And when things are a little bit more stable, there's not shocks, people behave very differently. And I'm not about to suggest that people should be running around buying property because we're in a period that feels like a shock. But it certainly challenges the thinking about an opportunistic purchase and deciding whether you can tackle that.
And it's a great point that shocks only last for a short period of time, history suggests. We even look at the COVID shock in terms of what it did to our property market or the economy, or the property market in particular, was flattish and went slightly back by 2 or 3% over only about 4 or 5 months.
Mm.
Now, there was so much fear, and that 4 or 5 months while you're living through it and you're looking to make a property decision or you're worried about your asset value dropping, can feel like a long time. But when you look back, things start to normalize. People start to go, okay, well, this is the new normal. And then things change. People start making decisions. People see opportunity. They see that the world hasn't caved in. Is that the saying? That's not really the saying, is it? The roof hasn't caved in on top of them.
The sky is falling.
Sky is falling. So that is really one of the big takeouts, I think, for people is, you know, that old saying, this too shall pass, that whilst you're living through it, months can seem like a long time. But when you're looking back over the journey of 30 years or longer, it's barely a drop in the ocean, isn't it? And then things average out when you look at it over a year or multiple years.
Yeah. I'm very mindful that our trip down memory lane with the interest rate movement has taken us way over time. So it's a big fat bump addition. Sorry, Jamie, and listeners, I hope you're enjoying. Before we say cheerio, though, Dave, you've got a few points here to just cover off. I'll hand over the reins to you to point out the important ones.
Well, do you know what? Given we're running out of time, how about I use them for my gold nugget?
Perfect. Pete, have you got anything to add before gold nugget time?
Yeah, because I promised to tell people when property prices drop. But before I do that, let me tell you when they rose. So the three biggest years since the ABS started taking stats, in 1988, the calendar year, property prices rose 33%. Last year, 2021, property prices rose 28%. That was the second best year. And the third best year was 2003, where property prices rose 19%. The 3 years, so the property prices have dropped 3 years in the last 34. The worst was 2018, where it dropped by 5.5%. And then 2011, where it dropped by 4.4%. And then 2008, where it dropped by 4.1%. So as you can see, the booms are much bigger than the drops in property prices. And I don't see a correlation there between, well, property prices have gone up really high, so then they have to come down really low. Because our biggest year was 1988, and we didn't see a drop in the property market for another 20 years. So, you know, there are many things at play. The RBA tries to help out. Banks try and do their bit. Government does their bit. Lots of different players in the market. So we can't just focus on, oh, interest rates are going up, so property prices are going to go down or the other way around. So stay calm. My gold nugget's actually going to be a property prediction for the next couple of years. So,
oh, how exciting.
I'll hold on to that.
Yay. All right. Well, put your thinking caps on. We'll come back to you.
If you've enjoyed our podcast, leave a review on iTunes and share the episode with your friends.
Now it's time for us to go mining for our gold nugget property tip of the day.
Dave, your gold nugget?
My gold nugget, if we look at a bit of the history, lowering cycles on average last about 3 years, increasing cycles have lasted about 2 years. All bar two have run for less than a year. The takeaways are that the property prices have not been significantly affected over that period of time. And that's because there are just many different factors that push and pull on the value of properties in Australia. And we won't bother covering off on all of them now, but Pete just touched on a number of them. Kate touched on a number of them at the start of the episode. You know, I'd be very surprised if we see an overall reduction in values of greater than 10%. Now, we made the call they wouldn't go by more than 5% when COVID hit, and that happened. I remember saying...
weren't as wrong as other people, Dave. Yeah.
I have to print us some T-shirts, eh?
I remember on one of our episodes, I think I was a bit stimulated on caffeine and just blurting out that I thought property values would increase by more than 10% in September 20, and obviously they went well above that in the end, but that was a bit of a bold prediction at that point in time. So I'll make a prediction as well, Pete, that I just don't think they're going to go greater than 10% because, you know, there's all the vested interests that step in, and, you know, the Australian property market is so critical to the Australian economy, the wealth effect, you know, and we do want to bring down inflation, but, you know, they're not going to do it at the significant cost of Australians' back pocket and wealth, I don't think. Sorry, steal your thunder a bit, Pete, but...
That's right, I've got something else thinking, to add to.
Yeah. I would be very surprised if they go for more than 10%, and the period of time we're looking at, you know, I don't know if people have seen, but one other quick thing is economists are already predicting rates will start being reduced in the second half of next year. Now the RBA has gone up by 0.5% this month and they're expecting 0.5%. So the RBA is going faster now. There's economists already predicting rates will start coming down again in the second half of next year.
Okay, so my gold nugget is very similar to Dave's. Trying to answer the question, will property prices drop by 15 to 25% like some commentators are saying? I don't think so. As I've demonstrated before with the ABS history for 34 years, they haven't dropped that significantly. So why would they now, when the economy is relatively strong? When I say relatively strong, very low unemployment and very low interest rates. Dave and I are on the same page. We don't think that nationally property prices will drop by 10% within the next 18 months to 2 years. But the other thing that I'll add is I don't think all capital cities will drop in value. And the reason I say that is for Brisbane and Adelaide to drop in value, like they've gone up almost 30% in the last, say, financial year. They're going to have to drop significantly to get to negative levels. So unfortunately, Sydney and Brisbane are already dropping in value, so it's a no-brainer to say that they will continue to drop. But to go from like 25% to a negative value, that is a huge change. So I don't think all capital cities will drop in value, but nationally, I don't think we would drop by more than 10%. And if we do drop by more than 10%, that would be the worst in 34 years. And I can't see that happening.
No, well, let's hold tight and review our predictions in 12 months' time and do a feature special. But until then, we've gone so well over. This is the longest episode we've ever put out.
Oh, really?
Almost
an hour. And the
bloke's
just come to mow my lawn, so perfect opportunity.
Guys, it's been great to catch up, and I've loved the data. And we'll pop some really good charts in our show notes for our listeners, and we'll try and keep it under an hour next time around.
Okay, bye for now.
See you later, guys.
Hi there, it's Anne-Marie from Property Planning Australia here. If you've enjoyed this episode and would like to learn more about some of the topics discussed, take a listen to episodes number 9, Why Mortgage Strategy is More Important Than Your Interest Rate. Episode 12, Property Cycle Management, Why Now is Always the Best Time to Buy if it suits your personal economy and you have a long-term property plan. Episode 46, Market Update, Recovery Lessons from Recent Recessions, the Great Depression, GFC, and Spanish Flu. Episode 97, Listener Questions, What Will Drive Capital Growth After Interest Rates Rise? And Episode 155, Plotting Australian Property Market Movements from 1970 to Now, The Impacts of Recessions, Inflation, Financial Deregulation, Population Growth, Unemployment Rates, and analysing what could disrupt the drivers of price increases.
Thank you for joining the property planner, David Johnston, whose company Property Planning Australia provides the only independent pure planning advisory in Australia that does not buy or sell property, insurance, investment or super product.
And the property buyer, Kate Bakos, recently awarded Buyer's Agent of the Year and an owner of an independent buyer's agency in Melbourne's Inner West. And of course, the property professor, Peter Kalizos, Australia's leading property university lecturer, chairman of Property Investment Professionals of Australia and seasoned investor and developer.
We've really enjoyed delivering this podcast, and we'd love you to join us on our podcast webpage at propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor.com.au or our Facebook page. Feel free to send us any questions and Dave, Pete and I will answer them for you.
So until next time, remember that each property decision you make is leading you towards your ideal lifestyle.
Everything we talk about in this episode is general in nature and should not be considered to be financial advice. We've put a lot of effort into making sure the information is accurate, but please don't rely on this information to make a decision. If you're looking for specific advice, please seek the help of a specialist, and remember, it's important you determine your trusted advisors are independent.